Hi, welcome to Venture Bros, the Venture Brothers podcast, hosted by After the Hype. I'm your host, as always, Brian Dressel. With me is Nicholas Friedemann.
Hello.
The Terrible. That's 2 weeks in a row, The Terrible. I can't do that again. We're going to say that one more time. We're going with Nicholas the Smelly.
Yeah, that's fair. It is smelly in this room because I am sweaty as a wet blanket. So,
are you wearing a shirt today?
I'll be honest. Yes, I am. But I wish I wasn't. So,
only you can solve that problem.
I like to point out you just said sweaty as a wet blanket.
Ooh, all right, the shirt's coming off. You said it.
And as always, we have Graham T. the Mason.
Yep, hello. That's what the T stands for. T the. And there's a big space in between. It's hyphenated. Yep.
I put it as two middle names, T and then the.
I thought that
was better.
Sometimes I go by Mr. T, sometimes not. So
it's like your birth certificate had a stutter.
This is Graham to Mason.
Mason.
Yeah, you should legally change your name.
Yep.
I can tell you how. My wife just did it. It's it's a long and expensive process, but it can be done.
Apparently.
All right, so this week we are talking about what is easily a lot of people's, not mine. Mine's still careers in science. But easily a lot of people's favorite episode of season one, if not the entirety of Venture Brothers, and that is Tag, Sail, You're It. This is season one, episode 10, written by Doc Hammer, directed by Jackson Publick. Quick, fast reactions on this one. What do you guys think?
Incredible. I love this episode.
It's really good.
Yeah. There's so many moments, like quotable moments, side gags, just world building. I mean, a lot of good stuff in this episode.
For me, it's where I fall in love with the Monarch.
Yeah. Accurate.
I always liked the Monarch from the very beginning of the show, but this is the episode where it's like, no, he's my favorite character right now. Like, not until like Sergeant Hatred really becomes like a major thing later. This is like my favorite character.
He does have a lot of good moments in this.
Oh, it's so good in this episode. Just so, like, his monologuing, just everything. Describing his poops to Dr. Girlfriend. Like, all of it. So good. Nick, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think this episode is really incredible. Like, I would say it's not my favorite. My favorite's going to be coming up later in the season. But I do think that this is, honestly, the strongest episode for season one. Like, it's the easiest one to show somebody and be like, this is what this show, when it's working at its, like, highest peak, can be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, there's a little give and take there. This is what it was before they started just exploding the universe.
Yes.
Like, for seasons one and two, I think this is about as, like, yeah, if they ended at season two, this would be, like, the show to, like, this would be the episode to introduce people on. But after season two, I feel like the show just explodes and then I think the different point episodes would be, well, we'll get to those months from now. But for the beginning, yeah, this would be a wonderful intro. If you've never seen the show before, this would be a great place to start. And then go back to the beginning so you understand what's going on. But just to get the sense of humor, wonderful place to start.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much world building, but like simple, like nothing too complicated. You're like, wait, who are these characters? I think it's a great, like you said, a great place to start. And I think this might have been, I mean, obviously, since we're reviewing it pretty early on, but I think this was definitely one of the first episodes I ever saw. And I think this might have been, you know, obviously, like, on Adult Swim, and I think it was, like, Turtle Bay, and then maybe this one, like, almost next. And so it's, like, with Turtle Bay, I was like, I don't know, I'll give it one more. And then I think this was next, and then I was like, oh, yeah, no, this show's gonna be incredible.
Yeah, no, this show's amazing. So I'll, since I made Graham do it last week, and I made Nick do it the week before, I'll do the breakdown of this one. So this one, it starts off with a security task force getting ready for this horrific, going to die. Like, if you want to see your kids again, don't, like, leave now. Like, you are so fucked if you work this job. Yard sale. it's basically just that. It is the Dr. Venture is broke, and he's going to sell a bunch of his shit. And the only people who want to buy super science shit are horrifically scary supervillains, and he's just totally fine selling this to all of the people who want to arch him and murder him, and that is fantastic, and he gets the help of his neighbor, and his sons start up a very professional lemonade stand, or lemonade and hoagie stand, and it's just so good, as you just kind of see everyone just kind of pop up, and it's a great way, like, it's a great introduction to the Monarch more so, it's a great introduction to Phantom Limb, it introduces more so Baron Underbite, because they mention him in, like, the very first episode with I'm your father's arch nemesis. I thought our arch nemesis was Baron Underbite. Mm-hmm. So you finally see him, and they hint, like, there's just so much. Like, there's so much in this one little thing, and it's all good.
And even though Dr. Venture doesn't get much screen time in this specifically, you totally get his character. Like, the reason behind him doing the tag sale is just from his father's successes and his failures. And that's pretty much, as his introduction as a character, that's pretty much all you need to know. And then the rest of it is the world around him that exists.
And this is also, I would say, the first time that they really solidify 21 and 24 as the go-to henchmen.
Yes.
So good.
And, like, yeah, 21 has one of his best moments ever. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, let's kind of jump through it and just talk about, like, what are the things that jump out at you? Like, what are the things that you like the most? We can talk about some stuff that, like, connections of the Venture Brothers universe, that sort of things. We'll just kind of start moving through it. For me, the one thing that I really like that pops up here that really doesn't become a major thing till way later in the show, and I don't know if it's just because they just wanted to reuse the character design or whatnot, but it's the first time you see Augustus St. Cloud.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that too, because...
Not the same voice, though.
Totally different voice, right? Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought. But yeah, same annoying sort of looking character.
Yeah, and I totally forgot that he was in this episode.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Until I was like, wait, no, what? He's in later episodes, but what is he? And I think it's like a lot of this other stuff too. It's like just on the fringe and in the corners, you see all these other characters that you'll see later on. Maybe not be major characters, but you'll be like, oh yeah, there's that guy too.
And there's things here that like weren't fully ironed out yet. Like Pete White and Billy are there. Like they're mm-hmm. shopping for stuff. They even buy the shrink ray that later comes back, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And at this point, you don't really tell that they're best friends. Like Billy considers Rusty his best friend.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous because he lives with White, but like that's their problem. But that's the beginning of many of their problems, including Robobo. We'll get to him later.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I kind of like that in the beginning, like Billy doesn't really like him. Like they mentioned Venture and he's like, he's washed up. But later on, they're buddies. Like they want to be hired by him.
Yeah. I think this is like they didn't really know. They knew what they had with the characters. Like if you removed them and looked at them in a vacuum, but I don't think they knew their place within that world yet.
Yeah, definitely. Like he's definitely still the surgeon, still very intelligent, still quiz boy, but this is like before they really knew like where his puzzle piece actually fit into the larger picture.
Absolutely.
Which is interesting, like the fact that it still works so well and that's still just kind of out of place, I really speaks volumes of how good the episode actually is.
For sure.
This is also the first mention of Hank Co, which becomes a major thing later on. I love Hank Co.
Yep. I actually wrote down a note because I didn't realize it was the first mention of Hank Co, but Hank's a really good businessman.
You sure about that?
Yes. 100%.
He's got a real head for business.
He does. For what? He's like, what, 12 or 13?
I think.
Yeah, maybe.
And he establishes a lemonade stand with a genuine business model, which is pushing basically sugar water to supervillains. Like, that's a genuinely good, like, he's not a good manager, but I think he has a good eye for how to make money.
Oh, he's a terrible manager.
Yeah. Oh, terrible. He can't risk another strike, bro.
Do you know what this is? A hoagie? This is to make people buy overpriced sugar water.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a good businessman.
Okay. I'll take that. Fair enough.
I'm not. No, I'm not giving this. He's okay with a lemonade stand, and then later on, he's good at selling his own dad's merchandise back to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good businessman.
If you can make that work, do it.
Yeah. Take advantage of your stupid father.
Oh boy, that hits a little close to home for me right now. My son ever does that to me, I'm going to be traumatized. Hey, Dad, you want these comic books? Ah, fuck.
wait, I don't know if I have that one. I should buy it just to be safe. One of my favorite introductions is Dr. Orpheus and just him getting jealous of, you know, Rusty's attention by supervillains. And when the fight breaks out, he's just jumping out there and he's just like, Dr. Orpheus, that's who did this. Remember?
Yeah. As great as that is, it's still better when he goes up to the monarch, slaps him in the face, and lights his feet on fire.
Yes.
And then immediately after, I forget who it is, the phantom or whomever comes up after him and whispers some weird crap in his ear. It's like, what the hell is happening?
Oh, man, this is a good one.
The comedic timing in this episode is pretty incredible.
It's so on point. Like, the whole conversation that the monarch has with Dr. Girlfriend trying to describe his poop while sitting in a fucking porta potty while she's being hit on by her former boyfriend. It's like, it's just, there's just layer on top of layer of just like, this is just pure genius. And I love Phantom Limb. He's one of my favorite characters in the show just because he's so unlikable.
Ugh, he's so sleazy.
He is. He's terrible, but I love him for that. Especially later on when he goes completely insane. But like, the one thing that bothers me with it is that, and I know I need to get over this sort of stuff because, you know, shows grow and change and whatnot, but they did such a good job later in the show establishing how the monarch met Dr. Girlfriend by being a henchman for Phantom Limb that I love that storyline so much that when this episode happens, he's like, who was that? Phantom Limb? Do you guys know each other? No, I never heard of him. It's like, oh yeah, I guess that wasn't the plan the whole time.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it's a dumb thing to have like as a sticking point or to be annoyed by, but it just because I like that storyline so much and I love that whole flashback thing of him being the worst henchman. Like, it's just kind of like, oh. Like, I wish that they had that in their heads so long ago, but that's asking for something that's impossible to have.
Yeah. I mean, the show does do an incredible job of remembering weird stuff and plot points like that, and not really even plot points, just like weird, almost insignificant details to a fault for the rest of the show, that it does seem kind of silly that they would forget or just not mention that or kind of, you know, change the storyline at some point. But it is asking a lot to get everything 100% correct throughout the whole thing. Yeah. from the beginning.
It's one of the things where, like, because the show is so strong and it's so good and it does all these things so well, that the few times where it just doesn't line up, it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying it's a bad show or, like, they should have, like, had all of this stuff ironed out perfectly the whole time. That's asking a lot. But when it doesn't happen or when it doesn't click, it's just like, oh, damn.
Yeah, it does come as a bit of a surprise.
Yeah.
Because, like Brian's saying, like, like all of us are saying, it does work really well at picking up things that are just like the shrink ray in this episode comes back.
Yeah.
And it's a plot point of a future thing. Mm-hmm. A throwaway sequence as a joke comes back in a later episode as like a focal point of that episode.
Yeah.
Like that's incredible.
You have a decal of a shrink ray on your shrink ray?
On the shrink ray. One other thing to just bring up about Phantom Limb is that I am obsessed with the fact that he has the same voice actor as Rusty Venture.
Commander, you've received a new message at your private terminal.
Nailed it. Freaking nailed it.
Fuck, that was so good.
I'm not looking at the cameras, but now I'm switching over to the camera to look at your face.
You should have seen Brian's face because he just froze and was sitting there staring like a 1,000-yard stare.
What did you do?
I think I forgot to silence my phone there.
No shit. God damn it. I even silenced mine and put mine on a cushion next to me. You jerk.
Yeah, mine was definitely full volume next to the microphone. Any other Mass Effect fans out there? I'm not even going to cut that out.
No, that was good.
Good. Good.
I'm sorry, what were you saying before my phone rudely interrupted?
No, I was saying that Phantom Limb and Rusty Venture have the same voice actor, James Urbaniak. It's incredible. That's it.
Thanks, Nick.
Not really worth the bit that came out of that, but... Yeah.
thing.
Yeah. I just think they're so, that's like a very talented thing. I would have never guessed that just watching the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Like, it's a, like when you go to, say, like Bob's Burgers,
yeah,
like you can pick out every time they repeat a voice actor. And like, it's nothing against the show. I actually think it works to the show's strength.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to a show like this, like there's so many people pulling double duty on so many different voices. And it's kind of hard to tell. Like, not all the time. Like, some of them are a little bit more obvious than others. But, like, especially with that one, I would have no idea. If you didn't look at the credits, they sound so different. Just, like, the cadence of their speech, just everything about it is just so distinctly different, you would never know.
Absolutely.
Which I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I think it goes to show, that like, the strength of casting.
Have you ever seen, like, him in a show where he's not animated?
Yeah.
Like, actually acting?
He's in Review.
Yeah, yeah, and he was in an episode of Weeds. Like, whenever he pops up, it's like, what are you doing here, Dr. Venture?
Yeah, exactly.
Because his normal speaking voice is much closer to Dr. Venture than it is Phantom Limb.
Yes. Hmm.
I'm trying to think of other things I wanted to bring up in this episode. Oh, I mean, I was going to save it for favorite moments, but no, nah, I just got to bring it up now before I forget. The lightsaber thing is one of my favorite things, I think, of all time. In the entirety of the show... Selling 21 a fake lightsaber for him to try to fight Brock Samson is just, oh, it's just so good.
And the confidence of he's like, no, I must do this alone. And you're just like, oh, God. Also the confidence of Brock. Here's a question. Here's an honest to goodness question. Do you think he recognized the faulty piece of shit invention that Rusty made? Or do you think that he was like, no matter what this is, I'm still going to kill him? Because he just takes it.
I think he has to know Rusty made it.
Yeah.
And he just...
I've been...
just keeps trying. He's like, oh, not on that one. Maybe this... Nope. 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 No. I've been...
Ugh.
But no, I think the... honest answer to your question is Brock has to know it was a bullshit thing that Rusty made.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Because, I mean, he at least knows to dodge things coming at him, and he just stands there and just lets it just swing through him. Like, which is so much more intimidating. Like,
seriously.
Like, I'm going to cut you in half, and oh my god, this sucks.
Ugh,
it's such a good moment.
I gotta throw a shout out to our researcher who is he loves the 21-24 argument of who would win in a fist fight between Lizzie Borden and Anne Frank. That is a hysterical conversation.
And it just jumps right into it. Like, no introduction whatsoever.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like, wait, what are they talking about?
It's one of those things where it's kind of like in the episode from last week where, like, they're talking about the two bags that they had that were slightly different.
Mm, yeah.
I think they kind of do the same thing like this. Like, they really make the henchmen's lives so boring that they just talk about their most random shit that comes in their mind.
For sure. And it's also, it seems to be implied that it's a conversation they have had before.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they definitely have a history.
Oh, yeah. And, like, that's kind of, like, in the first episode with Speedy, you kind of get, like, the henchmen are kind of friends and they know each other. This is the first time where you really see that, no, 21-24, like, they are bros. Like, they are the guys who do everything mm-hmm. together.
Exactly.
And that might just be a little bit of me inflecting just because I know where the show goes. But I think even when I saw it the first time, like, they didn't feel like just two random poles of henchmen. Like, I know that's kind of what they were going for in the beginning, but I think... is pretty immediate, like, oh no, these two characters written together are fantastic.
Yeah, and I think what's pretty great about this show too is it adds a moment. You're like, wait, you know what would be really funny if the henchmen like were people, like we actually humanized them and made them characters in the show. Because like if you look at any of the shows that this show references, you know, like Johnny Quest or any of the other ones, like any of the henchmen are just, oh yeah, they're just cannon fodder. They're just there to die. But this show. Actually reference yeah. it. You're like, no, these have to be people. They have to have, you know, families and friends and, you know, like, so what would it be like if these were people who this was their job? Their job was to be a henchman. Like, they would, you know.
Exactly.
And of course, later, with 21 and 24, their relationship, you know, when he gets picked up and all that stuff and, you know, you get to meet their families and stuff, it's hilarious. But this is the introduction to that, and I think, yeah, it's an incredible choice and wonderfully, wonderfully hilarious.
And just the performances by them, it's just so good. And, like, I always kind of feel bad that 24 had to die because they're tired of doing his voice. I know they've said that's not the only reason, but definitely way to do it a lot.
Yeah.
But, like, by having, like, their friendship, like, both grounded here and then, like, in reality, like, outside of their hench uniforms, like, it makes all of these, like, somewhat funny moments that much funnier when you go back and rewatch the show.
For sure.
Like, just seeing, like, them interact, like, they become quickly most people's favorite people in the show. Mm-hmm. Like they just do such a great job with them. Like, they're just so damn funny. One of the things in this episode that we haven't really brought up is there's a lot of really good Dr. Girlfriend moments in this.
Yes.
Like, they really hammer on Dr. Girlfriend is slumming it with the Monarch.
Yeah.
Like, you can kind of tell because they draw her kind of like a babe sort of thing, although she has that super creepy voice, which later just kind of feels weird if she had a normal, more female voice. Like, that's just, it's perfect for her. It fits her so well.
It really does. The weirdest way possible.
But when Phantom Limb is talking to her, like, he full-on calls it out, like, if you were to apply yourself, you'd be one of the best villains out there, and which is later, way down the road, solidified by her becoming the leader of the Guild of Calamus Intent.
Yeah, and you totally see that. I mean, you see that in other episodes that we've watched for this show, and even in this episode when she's driving all of them to the tag sale, and just, like, any of this stuff of, like,
yeah,
oh, you're, oh, okay, interesting. Oh, you're standing outside of the porta potty listening to your boyfriend taking a shit. Oh, okay.
Personally, I think the whole time you could always tell that she's smarter than the Monarch. Like, you get that. But this is, I think, the first time where it's not just that she's smarter than the Monarch. She'd be a better supervillain than the Monarch. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think that they definitely imply that. But I don't... It's interesting because I feel like they didn't... I don't know. Feel free to jump in if you feel like I'm wrong, but I don't feel like they knew what they wanted with her relationship to the Monarch, and I think that they slowly flesh out her character over the course of, like, the whole first season. And I think this is the first episode that you get where you actually get to see what her motivation is, and her motivation is she truly loves the Monarch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I agree. But I also don't think that she wants to be a supervillain. Like, in the sense that she doesn't want to be... She wants to be... Because she views herself as...
At least right now.
Yes. But I think that she also views herself as not his number two, but his co-number one.
Yes, and it takes him seasons to figure that out.
Exactly. And I think that's what she wants. She doesn't want to just go off on her own and do whatever. And that's the way people look at their relationship, is that she's doing him a huge solid. And I think that what it actually is that she truly loves him and that she doesn't really have any interest in being on her own without him.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think you're totally correct. Of, like, she doesn't want to be his partner. She wants to be his partner.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you're totally correct.
Yeah, and it's kind of how we said in the beginning of this episode, like, there's just so much in this thing to chew on. Like we're not really even talking about, like, Baron Underbite or...
yeah.
There's just so many little things in here that, compared to last week's episode, which also had a lot of seeds planted for the entirety of the show, this one does... this one does such a better job of it, though, because it has all these things in there where you can just watch it having never seen an episode of the show and enjoy the hell out of it, or you can watch it after watching every single episode and go, holy shit, they knew that then?
Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the big things, I didn't bring this up last time because this episode is actually like a kind of a perfect foil to the Brisby episode, is that the Brisby episode, like we've talked about, has these seeds, but it doesn't really have anything interesting to chew on or meaty around it. And this episode really embraces the world, though, because it takes something that's like a common sort of trope, especially in early 50s TV, of having a yard sale, and then putting it within this world of, like, Brock is yelling at him for not being safe enough, and he's like, you have a bin of death rays, and it's just like really leaning into what the strengths of the show are and the world of the show, and I think that's why it works better.
Yeah, I mean, every time I've tried to pitch this show to people, both successfully and unsuccessfully, the major thing I always push on people is, like, as much as you'll like the characters, as much as you like the humor of the show, all of that stuff, the reason that I always go back to it is the world. Is the world building, all of it. Like, that's what made me really fall in love with it. And I think as good as this whole season is, this is the first really great snapshot into how good that world will be.
Exactly.
Like, this really gives you the idea of how good it is and that we will get there. Like, we are, that's where we're headed, is into that huge world. And they just kind of take their time slowly getting you there, which I appreciate.
Yeah. And sets up a lot of the, you know, the more, at least immediately important relationships, and kind of shows you, okay, these are the important things to pay attention to right now. And so if this was the first episode you ever saw and you had to jump into the rest of the series, I think you'd be able to understand the rest of the series. You wouldn't really need to know much else.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people who would watch this one and go, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, seriously.
All right, do we want to move into favorite moments for this thing?
Yeah.
So my favorite thing, it's actually a quote that thankfully our reviewer or our researcher wrote down for me, because I totally forgot. But it's a quote that is straight out of Shakespeare, and it's about a poop, and I think that's phenomenal. So when he gets out, when the monarch gets out of the urinal, the porta potty, and he goes, "All sound and fury signifying nothing." Because I have said that to my wife too many times, and it's all because
same
of this show.
Here. Yep.
Because you know exactly what he means.
And I totally forgot where it came from until I rewatched this episode. And I was like, oh, yeah. No, I use that. Yep. I use that too much.
Another VentureBrothers quote has just wormed its way into my normal vocabulary. What about you, Nick?
So mine's a weird one, because I don't know. It has to be referencing something. It has to be. And I do not know what it is, and I'm fascinated by it, and it cracks me up every time I watch this episode, which is the melted guy. And he's like, "Officer, I'd like to press charges." And you're just like, what is that from? Because it has to be from something. What a weird thing to create from scratch. And I can't find it, because if you type in "officer, I'd like to press charges," it's just like how to press charges through your local police station.
Oh, no.
I will say this. After this episode, the guy who melted him is in jail the rest of the series.
That's true. That is very true. I didn't notice that. I mean, that's crazy.
Yep. Yeah, so he did press charges.
God damn it. If somebody can tell me on Reddit where the fuck that quote is from, I will be so happy, because it is so perplexing to me that is just made up for that. It can't be. It can't be.
Totally off topic. My wife had a very similar reaction. We watched The Running Man last night. And when we got to the Sub-Zero, Plane Zero quote, she's like, what the fuck was that? Why is that even a thing? Like, who, what?
Wait a second. Wait, Running Man is the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
He kills a guy named Sub-Zero. He's like, now Sub-Zero, now Plane Zero.
Terrible. Terrible line.
Terrible.
And he cuts his head off with his stupid stick, right?
I believe so, yes.
Oh, God.
I was kind of half in and out. I was feeding a baby.
That's fair.
All right, Graham, favorite moment from this show?
I mean, from this one episode, there's just so many to pick from.
I know.
But one of my favorites is Brock bumps into the monarch, and he falls back, and he's like, ah, my contact lenses! And then Brock, just totally nonplussed, just like looks at him and just walks past him. And Dr. Girlfriend walks up. He's like, you owe me $5. He's like, no. I said, and he helps you look for them. It's like, oh, shut up. You still owe me $5. I just, the comedic timing of that, just one, just meaningless, absolutely meaningless scene, is just so perfect. I love it so much. It makes me so happy.
It's both meaningless and, like, how cocky of the monarch to think he'd actually get Brock Sampson to help him look for a contact lens.
Seriously.
Oh, and then because my wife's taking a nap in the other room and she really wanted to make sure that I brought this up, her favorite moment of the entirety of Venture Brothers is in this episode, and it's when they do the, really? He's the guy from Depeche Mode! No, I saw it on the VH1. Totally straight.
Depeche Mode!
Oh, it's so good. That is also something you mentioned, that, like, the way Orange County is pronounced, like, wormed its way into your brain.
Yeah.
I feel like the way people say Depeche Mode is, the way I say it in my head is because of this episode.
Oh, totally.
I think one more thing just to mention, just like, as far as Dr. Venture and the Monarch's relationship, because I think in this episode, I don't even think they meet or talk or have any sort of exchange.
I don't think so, no. Beyond just waiting for him to leave.
Yeah. You kind of get to see the Monarch have this moment of kind of second guessing himself. Like he's kind of, like he has throughout the, you know, the rest of the series, is whether he should continue doing this or not, or how he started, or should he continue arching Venture, or should he arch somebody else? And through this moment, through this episode, he's kind of losing interest, and he's like, man, I kind of feel sorry for the guy. Like, look, like I'm looking around his house, like he gets into his house. He's like, I used to dream about taking a piss on this thing, and now I don't. Like, I don't even care. And then, like, another one of, you know, favorite quotes is like, seriously, what kind of jackass leaves every door unlocked? You're not gonna flush. Let them see the wrath of the Monarch. And, like, through the rest of this episode, then he finally, I forget what it is that cues him off, just ticks him off and then re-engages his rage against Dr. Venture. And, oh, I think it's actually when Dr. Girlfriend gets threatened.
Oh, yeah.
At the very end of the episode. And then it kind of re-engages and restarts his whole anger and his whole rage and his you know, final arching, which I think is an incredible way to dive deeper into the Monarch himself, you know, the man and what's going through his head. In such a short, simple episode and just a few key moments, you really get to see kind of what's going through him and, you know, who the Monarch really is. And especially their relationship between the Monarch and Rusty and Dr. Girlfriend.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like we keep saying, there's so much to chew on in this episode, and it's just, it's always a joy to go back to. That was everything I had. Do we want to do a quick round of plugs, and then we can say goodbye to everybody? I will say this. You're already on the After the Hype feed if you're listening to this, so please be sure to check out the rest of our episodes. We do movies every week, except for right now, because I am only recording this show currently because I'm taking care of the baby. Be sure to check us out there. You can find Graham on many episodes, and if you go way back in time, you can find Nick, and I am obviously on each and every one of them. Nick, anything to plug?
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. I've been working on that for a long time. So if you enjoy that series, by all means, pick it up. I'm sure it will be something. I'm going to consistently try and do a mediocre job plugging what I've been working on and genuinely proud of. But
I can say this much. I am very excited for it.
Perfect. Thank you.
The trailers look phenomenal. I'm very excited to play.
They really do.
Thank you.
They really do. Yeah.
The
good job on all the graphics.
Thank you.
The voice recording is really great.
Thanks.
That is what you did on it, right? I'm
yes.
trying to remember.
No, yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Graham, anything to plug?
No. Nothing.
Still unpluggable?
Still unpluggable.
All of our research today was very lovingly done by Brock Holiday. You can find him on YouTube and on Twitch. He did another wonderful job, and we really appreciate it. That is everything we have here, so I will say goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.
Solid.
Nailed it.